And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrow taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Marquise Munson behind the glass. Fellas, what's going on? How's everything going on this Monday morning?
Good. We've just been talking about Tiger King, which I haven't really watched, but Marquise got into. Have you done that one yet?
My wife has done that one. I have not gotten into that yet.
Yeah,
I have not devolved into the Tiger King yet.
I'm the same. I'm exactly the same. I was just telling Marquise, you know, I'm sitting there kind of doing work, and there'll just be the weirdest stuff I've ever heard because she's watching. I'm like, what are you watching? But I haven't, you know, I think you got to really pay attention to it because I know, like, everyone's gone nuts for it. But I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm going to get there.
Munson, have you enjoyed it?
Look, I'm going to say this, man. I watch a lot of documentaries. That's pretty much all I watch is wrestling, sports, and documentaries. Those are like top three. That is by far the most bizarre documentary I think I ever watched in my life. In my 29 years of living on this earth, that is the most bizarre documentary series I've ever seen. And I watched OJ documentary.
That's one of the great documentaries I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. This, on the other hand, very bizarre. It is from episode one to, I think, seven episodes, all of them an hour long. It was bizarre. But trust me, it is worth it.
Okay.
It is worth it. You would be like, because it's laughs. It's mostly just laughs and, like, your hands on your head, like, these people actually exist in this world. Like, these are actual people that live in this world. It's, trust me, watch it. And this is me, Mr. Criticism. That's telling you to watch
it. This is a big step for Munson telling us to actually watch something instead of not watch it.
Yeah. How about Ozark? Anyone else?
I never watched that.
I have started the first episode of season three, so I'm not too far deep into the new season, but I do love me some Ozark.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. You know, obviously I didn't time it this way, knowing what was going to happen, but I'm grateful that it came out this weekend.
So what did you boys get into besides, you know, the Netflix watching this weekend? Because I was kind of sitting around, and Friday night I went over on Twitter and took over the Twitter for an hour on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And really the next 2 days, I spent a lot of time outside. We were outside just kind of doing stuff in the yard and walking around and walking through the woods that are near our house. I didn't spend a whole lot of time in front of the TV this weekend. Now, I did make the decision in my mind. I'm like restarting the Marvel Universe, so I'm just going to go and watch every Marvel movie that's came out so far on Disney Plus. I'm just going to watch all of them. So I started with Iron Man. Then I think I'm going to get to Iron Man 2 today. So that's my next plan in terms of what I'm watching.
So you're not, we're doing that. You're not going by release?
I am going to go by release. Oh, okay. I'm going to go Iron Man. I think the next one's Incredible Hulk, right? And then right after that, I think it's Iron Man 2.
Okay. Yeah. We just did Doctor Strange. So we're on that path. Yeah. We were outside more. I actually took the kids to their school yesterday, and we played hoops outside. So 2-on-2, the three kids and me played some 2-on-2 hoops at the school basketball court, and I also played 1-on-1 full court with my son for a couple games, which is, like, you know, for me, a much needed workout. Actually we got through it without anybody really getting in a fight or bickering. So that was a positive.
That's very good.
And, yeah, some yard work and hanging out on the porch and stuff like that, you know. I mean, we try – same sort of idea. Try to get a little bit away from the screen as much as possible. I mean, you're still going to end up watching a lot of stuff. Watch some old sports and things like that. You know, there was a little Georgetown Nova 85 on yesterday for anybody who remembers that game. Villanova shooting like 78% to pull off one of the all-time shockers in NCAA tournament and certainly NCAA championship game history. But, yeah, tried to get out. And, you know, hopefully we move away. We had the thunderstorm stuff the other night. That got a little bit scary, you know, tornado watch and all that.
Yeah.
I kind of thought we were you know, heading toward some consistent warmth here, but I guess we've got one more downturn in us here, maybe.
Yeah, it looks like it. And that's, you know, it's kind of like I'm looking at last week over the weekend, the warmth, and I'm like, this is it. We finally made it. And it's just one more right back this week. This is how I get sick, Joe, in terms of like just a cold and my allergies start acting up is when the weather starts going back and forth like this.
Right.
I don't like that part of it. I need my, I've already had a taste of my 80 degree days. I need it to stay here now for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think you got two more days, and then I would bet, you know, then we're going to be into April, and it looks like at least, you know, like 70s that we can count on. So that'll make all this a little more tolerable. I mean, basically, we know we're in for another month of this for sure now.
Yeah.
Another month of locking it down and trying to turn this whole thing around.
Are we finding it's getting harder and harder, like by as the weekends go by and the weeks go by, to like keep yourself entertained without sports? Because I made like a purposeful decision this weekend to try to stay away from Netflix and stuff like as much as I possibly could. But after a while, you just kind of like, especially when you can't really go out and be around anybody or do anything really, like there's not much to do. Like I end up gravitating back towards the television at some point.
Yeah, it's I mean, I've almost gotten to the point now where I try not to think about sports. I miss it so much.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
I mean, it's probably – I mean, it's kind of weird to think because I'm kind of like Marquise on that. Like I watch sports. I mean, I like movies. I don't really watch too many shows other than like a show like Ozark or – I've gotten into Better Call Saul, but like, you know, like network shows really don't do a lot of that. I pretty much, you know, mostly watch sports. So now how do you go from with no sports watching more TV? Well, because you can't do anything. So it's been very weird, like so many things in life in the last couple weeks, or, you know, is it, it's just 2 weeks, right? I mean, I'm going to say this every week.
I'm losing track of time, dude. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea how long it's been.
I mean, it's like basically what, two, it'll be 3 weeks Wednesday.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way.
That'll be the last sporting event we saw.
This is the first full week of it being like, we had to do this. Because we could have already been past the 2 week mark, but everybody was still doing stuff. So then they had to, like, on last Sunday was when they said, okay, everybody 14-day lockdown, and then all of a sudden this is, like, week one. So this is basically the end of week one, technically.
Right. It's also, yeah, so it'll be 3 weeks Wednesday that we watched that last basketball game.
Yes. So,
right.
You know, well, again, that
Georgia and Ole Miss.
It feels way longer than 3 weeks ago to me. And it seems like... I mean, I'm like reminiscing about that game. So, but hey, another. We do know that the NFL draft is happening in 3 weeks, and at least there's that going on. There's some movement and news in sports, and you know, trying to. One thing, there's positives here. I think one is like for me, you know, I have spent more time with my kids and talking, and we've been better about eating as a family. You know, so there's that part of it. You know, you can get some reading done, organizing some stuff. I mean, you can find things to do here, trying to, like, cook really good stuff and still go get takeout quite a bit, too, because, you know, obviously we want to support these restaurants and businesses around here that are hurting through this time. But, you know, there's some things about this that have been good.
We had on Friday night like a Zoom virtual game night with some friends of mine. So like
that's fun.
Me and my wife, we had like, you know, three other couples, and we got on Zoom and played like charades for like 2.5 hours, which I never thought I would be able to do online, like just to be able to do it for that long. It was actually kind of fun. I miss social interaction. So Zoom is a great tool. FaceTime, my wife was FaceTiming her friends the other day. I think there was like 10 of them on there at the same time.
Yep.
It was incredible. I mean, the echoes that happen when you have 10 people FaceTiming at the same time, it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, my nephew had his birthday, so we had, you know, three other families. So they're like, we all got on FaceTime saying happy birthday. And the same thing, we've done some things with friends, like the FaceTime thing, and, you know, hey, what are you drinking? Find something weird in your liquor cabinet, you know. Talk about the old times and try to pass an hour or two here or there.
It is going to be interesting. Like, one day when we, like, all get back to normal and we've gotten through this, we come out on the other side of it, I do wonder how we'll look back. Obviously, the horror of it and the disease, that's going to be the main thing we look back at, and the people we've lost, all that stuff. But, like, from your own personal self and, like, your development with your friends and your family, I wonder how much closer this is bringing people. I know, like, for my wife and I, it's been really good just to be able to hang out with each other all the time. Like, throughout a normal work week, like, we don't get to see each other that much, just because, especially when the Preds are at home, like, our schedules just don't line up together a lot. Joe, you mentioned, like, spending a lot more times with your kids. I heard a lot of things over the weekend about people – you know, I think they just kind of accepted now that this is what we're going to have to do for the foreseeable future, and they're trying to get as many positives out of it as they can at this point.
Yeah, and I think when life returns, there's going to be a lot of appreciation for things that were taken for granted before. Now, I will say that I remember thinking that life and the way people thought about life and related to each other was going to change dramatically after 9/11.
Yeah.
And it did for a while. And then, you know, it sort of just, people quickly will go back to taking things for granted. I mean, that's one thing that taught me. So I can't sit here and say, I think this is going to be like transformational for society, but I think there's gotta be some things here that people take from this, in terms of appreciation, and like you said, maybe just even during this time, some positives in terms of really connecting with people and slowing down for a minute. Because that's same with our life. It's just completely nonstop, and there are weeks where it's like you feel like you didn't talk to anybody or see anybody, and traveling and all that stuff. I mean, the slowdown is, there's definitely some positives that you can take from it.
When we come back, could what's going on right now in the world of sports, forcing some of these leagues to pause their season, could that be the perfect time for commissioners and people in charge of these respective sports leagues to reevaluate their leagues and maybe tinker around with some different ideas as we move forward here? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rextrow here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rextrow from The Athletic. And Joe, just kind of wondering, like, as other sports leagues like the NBA and the NHL, the MLS, they're forced to take a pause in their season right now. Even the Major League Baseball that's supposed to have gotten kicked off last week obviously did not. As they're sitting here just kind of waiting to see what happens in our world and to see when they can come back and resume action, would this be kind of the perfect time for commissioners and league executives and everybody involved in the decision-making process to kind of take a step back, evaluate where they are from a league standpoint, what their game schedule looks like, maybe their playoff formats, all these different things that sometimes come up for discussion? And the league that really stands out to me, Joe, that I think can and probably will do some of this, at least during this time, is the NBA. Because we heard some talk about this kind of before all this started in terms of the NBA maybe considering moving the start of their season back from October, maybe back to November or December. We've heard some talk about, you know, the playoff formats and different leagues, maybe the NHL, as you're considering, you know, what's the best way to come back if you're able to this season? Maybe you take a look at changing the playoff formats overall. It just seems like to me, Joe, this could be a time when you really don't have anything else to do. Maybe start coming up and start doing some self-evaluation of your formats and the way that you do things from a league standpoint.
Yeah, and like you said, the NBA has engaged in some of these talks already, you know, in terms of trying to, especially like the playoff situation and how teams get in, having this, I mean, they've had these ideas of like play-in games and sort of like a mid-season thing where you have different teams, you know, almost like bracket busters in college basketball. Now, the thing is, though, you know, if you're talking about less inventory. I don't think that ever happens. You know, you can sit here and say, man, I agree with anybody who says I don't need 82 NBA games. I don't need 82 NHL games. But, you know, if you're the ones running the cash register, you know, you're not going to take inventory away from yourself. So I have my doubts about that changing. Now, maybe the playoff situation can change. I do think, Robbie, that, yes, this is a time that you have time to evaluate everything and sort of audit yourself. This is also, when you talk about college athletics, look, I think that the longer this goes on, the more and more likely that you'll see athletic departments, and in particular non-Power 5 athletic departments that don't have the kind of financial, you know, backup that the big schools have, you know, cutting sports. I think you're going to see fewer college sports because of this. So that's an unfortunate result of all this. But maybe you'll see some kind of significant change in one of the pro leagues. I'm a bit skeptical of that, but maybe.
Yeah, and look, to be honest with you, like, I work in the NHL, and I'm very kind of close to what goes on there. I wouldn't expect much change at all from the NHL as they move forward. Now, they're going to be forced to if they come back this season. I mean, in some way, if they come back and resume this season at any point, they're going to have to change the impact and the format of something, whether it's just starting the playoffs immediately and going by points percentage, like something will be different. But I think, like, the NHL has made it pretty clear through this process that they want next season to be as normal as possible. So I don't anticipate there's much change going on or even much discussion of change in the NHL. The NBA, that one I do kind of wonder about in terms of, you know, we heard the conversation specifically before this started about moving the season back and starting it later. Maybe if you're Adam Silver and the NBA, you consider doing that. I mean, I guess you'd have to weigh what the positives and negatives to that would be. I think positives, if you move it back later, it's more time for football to kind of go away, especially college football, and it opens yourself up, to a more visible product early on. I think that's the original reason why the NBA was considering that change anyway, but no, I wouldn't expect much of anything from the NHL. I think the NBA would be the one that would be more likely to put changes in place.
Well, as a consumer of sports, if you could give me the NBA, certainly a month later, that's great. I mean, it's everything gets lost around that time of year. There's so much happening. You've got, you know, postseason in baseball. Football has gotten into conference play. You know, in college football, I'm talking about. Obviously, the NFL's in full swing. NHL. If the NBA started a month later and let the NHL have that month, you know, that month of October, and just take all that, and now the NBA starts in, like, you know, mid-November.
Yeah.
And then you could have your Stanley Cup playoffs sort of peaking while it's still early in the NBA playoffs, and then in the month of July we could actually have the final. I know it'd be weird, but as a sports fan, I would be grateful to have those two things separated from each other, because how many times in the spring do you end up with – and, of course, it's funny to say this now when we would, like, we'd take any sports event we could have. But how many times in the spring do you sit there and you have a great NBA and NHL playoff game out at the same time?
Yeah,
tons of times. So if you could push everything back a month and take the NBA season – into the end of July, and then you don't really have a huge gap. That, I mean, the July is, it's got to be the worst sports month, right? I think it's easily the worst sports month. Turn that into the NBA's month, and then you got football camp starts right around the end of the finals, and away we go. I'm all for it. And I mean, I'm sure, like, the initial thought from guys in the NBA is, oh, but that's the summer. Okay, well, your summer just moves back. So now, you know, you're not messing around in training camp in September. You're doing it in October. Take September and do all the same stuff you used to do. I would love that.
See, the difficult part about all of that, like, all that sounds, from an NBA fan's perspective, that sounds great for me, because I can just go from NBA Finals to SEC Media Days, because that's kind of the kickstart of college football to me.
Yep. You could watch NBA Finals at SEC Media Days.
Exactly, but the problem will be every 4 years having to worry about the Olympics and having to worry about NBA players you know, having to make that transition from I'm playing a playoff series game to all of a sudden I'm going to go play in the Olympics probably like 3-4 weeks later.
Right.
So that's going to be the difficult part, that every 4 years they're going to have to manage, unless the USA, Team USA is going to be a team full of guys who didn't make the playoffs.
Well, like, that's what you're probably going to have, is you're probably going to have a little bit more late swapping for some guys who go deep. But, okay, there's enough good guys, right? I mean,
yeah, but are most of them are in the playoffs. Like, and that's the difficult part. So, like, yeah, let's say you want Steph Curry on your Olympic team every year. Steph Curry's probably going to go second, maybe to the conference finals every year. Then you kind of lose out on most of those guys. Klay, Steph, that's two guys that you're missing from the Olympics. So that's going to be the difficult part of just trying to find. And obviously you don't have to worry about that, but just every 4 years.
But
you know, but that will be the part that they'll have to balance.
But I'll counter that if you just flip. So now on the back end, because before the back end, you get done with the Olympics in like whatever, like August 20th, right? And you're like right to training camp. So now on the back end, you have another month of chilling and relaxing after the Olympics before, you know what I mean? So I think you're right. You'd probably have more guys who would have to bow out because they don't want to go right into it. But I don't know. Hey, to me, if that's your only downside, I'm in.
Oh, no, I'll take it.
I'm in.
Well, the other part is, like, if you're a player that just got done playing in the playoffs, or, I mean, even if you go to the NBA Finals and you're having to go play in the Olympics a couple weeks later, I mean, you're still in pretty good shape at that point. Like, it's not like you're having to ramp it back up. You could, I think it would be pretty easy to make the transition of going from, you know, competing in the finals, continuing to practice, and then going and playing in the Olympics, where, let's be honest, like, if the United States puts together an Olympic team, a really quality Olympic team, I mean, they're probably going to win most games by 40 or 50 points. So it's not going to be that taxing until you get to the later rounds of the Olympic tournament where the competition gets pretty good. But I think it actually would be interesting to see, like, players go from, okay, we just got done, we've won an NBA championship, and we're going a week and a half, 2 weeks later, to start the Olympics. I think that'd be fascinating.
Yeah, and it also, it helps the young players as well. Like, just imagine, like, because I remember when Carmelo went to the Olympics with Kobe and he was playing with all these guys. He learned a lot from them that he carried over to the NBA season. So just imagine a guy like Ja Morant being around Olympic caliber players and kind of just soaking up game from them that he's going to carry over to the Grizzlies. And so that benefits them down the long run. So you'll get a lot of young players that are going to end up in the Olympics, and then they're going to get a lot of experience playing against different levels of talent, and then also being around some of the high-level players that they probably are around every now and then when they play games against each other, but not around them a lot like they would be in the Olympics. So it kind of benefits, but then I can also see the part where it's like, you know, some players are not, especially like someone like LeBron's age, is not going to want to go from NBA Finals to Olympics. He'll probably just bow out and chill his summer.
Yeah, there's some wear and tear. You're right, Robbie. You'd be in shape for sure, so you wouldn't have to have like a little mini camp to get in game shape. You'd also, depending on your age and all that, you might be like, man, I just can't. I can't go from that, from spilling it for 2 months like that to this. But again, there's enough guys. There's enough guys to make it happen. I think we've solved something for Adam Silver, so make it happen, Adam.
Yeah, I hope he's listening right now, because we've just come up with about 3 or 4 good ideas I think he could put into practice there. Also, like, real quick, like, rule changes. If I'm other leagues, like, I'm figuring out some rule changes right now. Like, in the NHL, this is going to be really small, but, like, high-sticking a puck into the net and it being too high, that just drives me nuts. Like, I think there's so much skill involved, and I get there's like a player safety element, but as long as you're not like hitting someone in the face, I think goals, any way they go in, outside of a player picking up the puck with his hand and like chucking it into the back of the net, I'm cool with all goals being scored, whether it's kicked in, it's high-sticked in. I don't really care about any of that. So that's my NHL example of, while this is going on, if you're the NHL, start considering some rule changes. Let's get a little bit more offense involved in the game.
I like that. I mean, if you have room around you, why can't you do it? Now, obviously, if you end up high sticking someone, then you know you're going to pay for that. But that would be fun. I also would like some clarity on what's reviewable and what's not in the NHL. I mean, we've run into that a little bit with, like, wait, why isn't this reviewable? Why is that reviewable? And like with all the leagues, and man, especially I think college basketball now, we've got to cut the review time down. We're never going to go away from instant replay. We never should, because you want to get things right. But we can't be reviewing every little piddly thing and taking 10 minutes to do it.
The other one, which I think needs to change, is in football, where you fumble the ball on like the 1 yard line, it bounces through the end zone,
yeah,
and all of a sudden it's a touchback.
That's
I hate
a good
that.
Point.
That may be my least favorite rule in sports. I hate it.
That is something that's got to be looked at. I agree. And I hope they, even though everybody's going to say they got to get rid of the PI thing, you know, because obviously like the review, I hope they keep it and just keep, and people just get used to the idea that it's going to have to be late game and massively just like blatant the way it was in New Orleans, or you're not going to get it. But at least it's there as a mechanism to fix an incredible, you know, bad call that changes your Super Bowl participant.
Yeah, don't overuse it, because I think it got right. overused a lot
well,
this year.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of them was like, no, we're not going to overturn it. The call stands. And then everybody looked at that from the outsider perspective, like, so we just implemented this rule and it just doesn't work. No, it's just you're just doing it at like just random times. It's like,
yep.
If it's blatant, then call it. If it's not, if it's just, you know, you think it's pass interference and somebody else doesn't think, just don't call it.
It's there to fix just the unbelievable
yes.
error, like in New Orleans. And everything else, I'm fine with it. I like how they've done it, honestly. Like, just you're not going to get like, oh, he had his hand on his back. You know, no. If it's like a dude clobbers someone and somehow an official looking at it doesn't call it, now you can fix it.
When we come back, Vanderbilt guard Saben Lee has declared for the NBA draft. How surprised were we by that announcement? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was ESPN senior NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski talking about what the moving target has become in terms of the draft and when that could take place depending on when the NBA season resumes or if the NBA season resumes. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, over the weekend, Saben Lee, Vanderbilt guard, declared for the NBA draft. He announced that on Friday. Now, he has not hired an agent, and I think he has until June 3rd to withdraw from the draft pool to be eligible to return to Vanderbilt. How surprised were you that Saben Lee made his declaration for the NBA draft on Friday?
I was not shocked that Saben Lee would declare and to go see how he stacks up. I think that's the smart move. I mean, I think for anyone who's as talented as him, and certainly someone who just coming off his junior season has 1 year left of college basketball, I don't know why you wouldn't. Go check it out. You know, go match yourself up against those guys. So the surprise to me, and like you said, Robbie, he didn't hire an agent, as he shouldn't have, but when you saw his I think it was on Instagram. I assume everything's on Instagram now.
It was.
Message. It seemed very much like a goodbye, you know? And so then I thought about instantly, okay, so and sometimes people just say, you know, it's like almost like you cover yourself. Depending, no matter what happens, make sure you say, like, hey, thanks for Vanderbilt, everybody. It's been great. But it just felt like a goodbye. And then I thought, is it possible that, you know, he could go through this process, you know, decide that he's not going to go to the draft and he's not going to be a prominent pick and then transfer somewhere? I don't know. That would be really surprising to me. But as far as just the idea of going and not hiring an agent and checking it out, absolutely, it's the right move, and that's not that surprising. The problem for Saben Lee and for a lot of guys who are doing this right now, you mentioned that date could change, of course.
Yeah.
And things could get so compressed with this whole situation that these guys don't get a chance to see how they stack up with other guys. You know, I mean, look at what has happened with the NFL draft and all the things people normally do that they don't do now. That could happen with the NBA draft too, which would be too bad for a guy like Saben Lee. I think Saben Lee on a court with a lot of guards who are going to be NBA draft picks would not just match up, I think he would stand out athletically. Obviously, a big question with him. Couple of things. One is just running a team, which I think he got way better at this year. And then, of course, his jump shot.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the big question for him for sure. And the thing I thought of immediately was just Vanderbilt. And like you said, Joe, I don't blame Saban Lee at all. I think it's a smart play to at least go out there and see what your value is, where you could be picked in terms of the NBA draft, and make your decision from there. But, you know, just kind of operating under the assumption that maybe he doesn't come back to Vanderbilt next year, I mean, that's going to put this Vandy team in a pretty big hole that I think needs all the players they can get right now for the depth and for the development of that team. Because we saw them, you know, they continue to get better at the end of last season. And you know, a lot of nice players came about. I mean, I think Scottie Pippen Jr. showed a lot toward the end of the season as well. But a big part of why they were still competitive and a big part of why they were still hanging around in these games and winning some of these games was Saban Lee was just going off. And, you know, if Saban Lee was playing at the same level at the end of the season, if he'd had that level all season long in the SEC, I mean, you're probably talking about the SEC player of the year at that point. So it's going to be a huge loss for them if he's not able to come, if he doesn't come back and play next year for Vanderbilt, because that's a team right now, every scorer you can get, that they need it.
Yeah, no, he could be next year, and again, this is everything having to break right. It's Cleavon Brown coming back. It's Dylan Dessous taking a huge step, Jordan Wright, Pippen, some of these young guys taking big steps, maybe sort of a surprise contribution somewhere along the way. If this Vanderbilt team could be something like pushing to be around 500-ish in the SEC, and I think that's a stretch, but I also wouldn't say it's like out of the realm of possibility. With him taking another step as a player, he's absolutely an SEC Player of the Year candidate. I mean, he's a guy who all of a sudden you could look up at the end of his Vanderbilt career and start matching him up with some of the great players who have played there. I mean, that's how good he was this year and how good he could be. It's also a guy who has gone through a ton of losing. I mean, this guy, you know, the year before he arrived, you know, Bryce Drew's first year, Vanderbilt made the NCAA tournament. It was a really nice, surprising year. Great late season charge to the tournament. Probably should have beat Northwestern in that first game. And Saban Lee comes in, and it's been just there's no way it's been easy, you know? I mean, you lose that much, especially the last – well, obviously, especially the sophomore year. You get your coach gets fired. But even this last year, I mean, they played better. They got better. He was unbelievable on a lot of nights. And still, you're talking about a 3-win SEC team. So that's probably got to wear on you as well.
Yeah, I mean, no question about that. And like you said, Joe, I mean, I wouldn't think this would happen just because of – you know, you're at a place that you're comfortable with, but say he doesn't go to the draft and makes a decision to transfer at that point. I think that's probably, at least in my opinion, the least likely scenario. But you're right, when you read that Instagram message, it does read as basically a farewell to Vanderbilt. So I do wonder if that's on the table at all for Saban Lee throughout this process. I would hope not. I would hope if he does come back and play college basketball, it's at Vanderbilt. But yeah, you know, you really couldn't blame a guy in terms of the losing aspect of this as well. Maybe you want to go somewhere else and have a chance to compete in the tournament, maybe compete on a bigger stage. But I would hope if Saban Lee makes the decision to not enter the NBA draft and come back and play next year in college basketball, that it's at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and I would think that considering the way Jerry Stackhouse used him and certainly – helped him improve, I would think he would want another year of that if he's playing college basketball. And if he were to transfer, I don't believe he's getting his degree in 3 years, so we're not talking about a grad transfer. You know, you would be talking about either sitting next year or, you know, obviously the NCAA waiver process is wacky, and sometimes, yeah, you know, people get that approval to play right away, but I wouldn't anticipate that being on the table for him. So, yeah, if he comes back, it should be at Vanderbilt. And, again, I would think that, look, if he can go and compete with these guys, and you never know, a team might fall in love with him, and it might just be like, you know what, you've helped yourself and you got a shot, and I still would be very skeptical that he would be a first-round candidate. And, of course, the first round is the only way that you get any kind of guaranteed contract in the NBA. But I could still see that maybe panning out, and he's saying, hey, I'm ready to go. I can be in this league, and I know it's going to be a lot of G League at first, but I'm going to keep improving as a player. But I think the way he improved this year, I don't see how you could look at that and think it's coincidental that Jerry Stackhouse was his coach. I think Jerry Stackhouse very clearly sort of verbalized before the year what kind of talent he is and what he needs to do to improve his game, and you saw it play out on the court. So if I'm Saban Lee and I'm not all in on the NBA, I'm in on getting my Vanderbilt degree and getting another year under Stackhouse.
Joe, whether it's this year or next year and he decides to declare for the NBA draft, what's the upside if you're an NBA team, do you think, for drafting Saban Lee?
Well, I think that Saban Lee certainly is a guy, if you're an NBA team, you're like, look, that guy can come out here and change the pace off the bench, and he can guard anybody. Now, Saban Lee has not been a consistently great defensive player, but he can do it. He is, and that's, I think, another part of his game that needs to improve. We mentioned running a team and shooting. He's got to be, I think, embrace more of the lockdown role, but I think you saw a lot this year too. He had some great nights defensively as well. If you're an NBA team, like, look, that guy can match up with any guard in this league as an athlete. So he can come out here, he can push pace, he can finish at the rim. Again, a big question every NBA team is going to have is, can this guy shoot efficiently enough? I mean, his shot form is a little bit funky, and he has not had great numbers in terms of his outside shot. I mean, he had some big nights this year. I think that it seems like they improved it, but that's going to be your question. But certainly, again, he can fit in on the floor in an NBA game, and he will not look out of place. And in fact, I think he will stand out at times.
When we come back, why in the world has Jadeveon Clowney not been signed yet? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad taking you through this Monday morning. And Joe, Jadeveon Clowney, it's been an interesting case study to watch what's gone on with him. We've heard reports of him asking for $20 million per season or more, and teams just have not been willing at this point to come really anywhere close to that. And I think, you know, you look at what happened. I read this on Bleacher Report over the weekend talking about how there's a growing thought around the league that Clowney won't be signing anytime soon, and maybe he even waits until training camp to sign a deal, and maybe goes a one-year deal and comes back and tries to re-enter free agency next year after what he would hope would be a big season for him on a one-year deal. I just look at what's going on right now, and if I'm an NFL team and he's asking for $20 million, I look at some of the injuries he's had. I'm just not coming anywhere close to that, and it's looking like, at least from his perspective right now, like his price isn't coming down a lot in terms of his willingness to negotiate on a longer-term deal. I'd be surprised at this point, and this is just me, Joe. I think the most likely route for Jadeveon Clowney is signing a one-year deal and maybe trying to re-enter the free agency pool next year. And I wonder how much teams outside of Seattle, who he was with last year anyway, like how much, if you're the Titans, are you interested in bringing Clowney in for a one-year deal and then just letting him go to free agency after that? Like, I think it's an interesting predicament if you're an NFL team trying to sign Jadeveon Clowney that you have to kind of weigh the pros and cons of there.
Yeah, well, first of all, I absolutely believe the Titans are interested in Clowney, and they're monitoring this situation, and I think there's a couple other teams that are doing the same, maybe more than a couple. But, you know, really, if you look around, I don't think there are that many suitors for him. I don't understand the idea of waiting until training camp to sign. So you're,
I don't either.
If you're Clowney, now you're waiting for teams that, at that point, they've had to figure something else out, even if it's a cheaper option. They've gone through the draft. They've gone through undrafted free agents. I mean, every single team that you would sign with now has way less money. And so, I think the longer time goes, there's one thing that's going to happen to your price tag. It is going to go down. So if this is if Clowney thinks that you know he's worth this and that you know right now the market is unfair, whatever, then yeah, I think the idea of a 1 year deal is fine, but he should look to do that now. And how much is he going to be willing to accept? I don't know. And how much would the Titans be willing to pay? I mean, I think you start at you take that number 15. And maybe go a little lower than that. Maybe they'd pay 15 for a year. You know, I think with the Titans, maybe more than some teams, but I think you're looking at, you know, like this 2 year window. You know, like you know you got Tannehill, you sign him for 4, but you can get out after 2. You know, we'll see with Derrick Henry. I do think a deal is going to be made. You basically look at it like a 2 year. Window here to see if you can really make a run, get back to where you were and take another step. So if you could get Clowney signed up for this year and you could make it work with all the other numbers, I'd say why not? I don't know where he's going to go with the number.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, if Clowney's not looking for, you know, $20 million to start this process off, like, if he's more, I think, realistic about where his number is, he could probably have gotten, you know, $17, $18 million just because people overpay for free agents all the time. Like, it happens all the time, every year, in every sport, not just the NFL. But I think once you start, you know, asking for $20, $21, $22 million, and teams, I think it was reported that the Seahawks offered him like $18 million, and you turn that down. Like at that point, if you're another team, you're just like, I don't really feel comfortable coming close to that. You mentioned 15 if you're the Titans, Joe. I mean, I think that's probably the maximum end of the deal that I'd be willing to go at this point. So I wonder if Clowney has kind of approached this the wrong way, and at the end of the day, maybe that ends up costing him money.
Yeah, and again, when you're talking about a core injury and now teams can't do physicals. I mean, that's just, that's bad luck. You know, you mentioned that. See, I'm looking at the Seattle Times right now. And like you said, there was one mention of that number. But according to the Seattle Times, it's the general consensus, and I'm quoting this, is that Seattle's offer was more in the $13 to $15 million range, which that makes sense. I mean, like, maybe earlier Clowney might have turned down a higher thing. There was a report too that Miami offered him 17, apparently, which I missed that one. I'm reading the Seattle Times story again, but you know, the core injury is a problem, and the 3 sacks doesn't help, even though again there's more to him, much more to him as a player than that. But I think, you know, if you're the Titans, you also of course are looking at this like, well, Jarrell Casey was moved, the salary was dumped, Austin Johnson has moved on. There's serious need to replenish your defensive front 7 from various spots. And of course, Clowney's a guy you can move around a little bit. So this would be, if it could work in your favor and that number can get whittled down a little bit, you know, I mean, it makes a lot of sense from a few different angles.
Joe, the thing that I think we've both been trying to figure out, like now that they've moved on from Casey, you mentioned Austin Johnson not coming back either. Like, if it's not Clowney, who is it? Who do the Titans go after, like, at that point? Because, I mean, you look over the weekend, Derek Wolfe signs with the Ravens, which, by the way, the Ravens just continue to look better and better as this summer has gone on here. I think they're going to be right there again.
Yeah, they just have endless money.
Apparently
they,
so.
They just keep just signing guys.
Yeah, I mean, when your quarterback's on a rookie deal, that's when you can do this.
That's
so
true.
Good for them, but you just look around if you're the Titans, and if it's not Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, the options that I think you're really comfortable with at that point are just not there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so up front, you've got some guys out there still. There is the Snacks Harrison, Damon Harrison.
There is Snacks.
You've got Tim Jernigan, but he's been hurt a lot, you know, in the last few years. Of course, got TDs. Got TDs been talking about Teron Davenport, Marcus Golden for a long time. I mean, he's been big on him. He's still there.
Weeks and weeks he's been talking about.
Yeah, you know, he's still out there. So, I mean, there's a few guys. I think Everson Griffin still out there, and he's, I believe so. I mean, I know sometimes these guys, yeah. I mean, you know, he's been a nice player. He's older. A a few guys like that who are, and obviously you've got the draft, and I agree with TD on Marlon Davidson. I think he's a really, really nice talent guy who would look good here. You just don't know how that will work out, and where do you get him, and would you have to move up, or you know, I mean, with the draft where you're at with the Titans, you know, obviously it's hard to count on a lot. So I think there's going to be something here, and it just feels to me like the Clowney thing is sort of just everybody's waiting and trying to feel this out. But again, there's just the lack of comfort, I think, from teams too, when you talk about not being able to give your own physical for a guy who had a core injury.
Yeah, and that's the big part of it. And, you know, they mentioned that in the Bleacher Report article as well, just talking about how I think ESPN's Jeff Darlington talked about it and said, quote, the restrictions keep him from teams being able to look into him physically. I really think he'll just wind up going back to Seattle for a year, maybe a one-year deal, proves himself, and comes back into free agency next year. That, again, a quote from ESPN insider Jeff Darlington. So it's looking like, and look, we don't know where this is going to go. If you listen to some of the reports out there, I think it's been this way for a couple weeks. Maybe the leading candidate still is the Seahawks to bring him back, whether that's on a one-year deal, a multi-year deal, who knows. But it is interesting to watch. You know, we mentioned just from the on-field aspect how much the coronavirus has impacted sports and the discussion and the disruption that it's placed. The physical with Clowney is a big thing because you're right, Joe. Those core injuries, that's something if you're a team, you have to be able to evaluate that in person and make sure you're comfortable with what you're investing in.
Right, and he's had some other things too. So,
yeah,
it's again the whole idea of him waiting until camp. I mean, I guess this could tie to that in terms of maybe he'd feel even better about being totally healthy, and now you can get a physical and all that stuff. But I don't see how that's going to help if he wants to maximize what he can make in 1 year, have a monster year, and then turn that into a longer-term deal. I mean, the 1 year is going to be less money if he waits until camp. I can't see how it wouldn't be.
When we come back, Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. We'll get his thoughts on Jadeveon Clowney. Should the Titans pursue him? What should their top number be in their pursuit of Jadeveon Clowney? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.